Well, the second Sunday in a row, Christ is revealed as the image, the icon of God. This is the measure that we need to apply to everything else that we learn about Jesus. The readings today reiterate the point to make sure that we have grasped it, that through Christ, God has given us the light of true knowledge and is to be found not in the essence or the identity or any such abstraction, but in the actual, real, physical person of Jesus. Rather like John the Baptist a few weeks ago in our gospel stories, Paul goes against the grain, against the inclination to grasp at status and power. Rather, he insists that we preach not ourselves, but Christ. It is the strongest possible counter to a culture that says it's all about me. It's also a counter to a culture where we are worried about hierarchies. Paul could have said, I preach Jesus Christ and I have been appointed as his chosen mouthpiece. But instead, he teaches us that the true preacher is the one who is lowest on the ladder of status. He says, we are your slaves. This is what he tells the church at Corinth. Now, the vision of the divine provided in the book of Kings is very different. Instead of transforming the meaning of being divine by exalting a human being, it transforms the very meaning of being human in the first place by drawing a mere mortal human being into the realm of the divine. It is a masterpiece of storytelling, especially if we don't worry too much about the geography, the logic, of the journey that Elijah and Elisha make as they make their way. One view of how to tell a story is to surprise the audience with an unexpected plot twist. That's the staple of most television shows, things like Line of Duty or Law and Order. Another looks more naive, but is actually more subtle. And that is to share with the audience the secret of what is about to happen. That's what the author of Kings does. He makes a point of telling his audience that the day of Elijah's departure is at hand. And then he makes the players in the drama reveal that same fact to one another. The groups of prophets who confront Elijah and Elisha on their journey toward the Jordan keep trying to put them off. They take it as a given that the day of one's death is something to be avoided at all costs. On another level, this is a story about succession. How does one prophet make way for another and ensure the continuation of that calling? Elisha assumes the mantle of Elijah, giving rise to that English expression, assuming the mantle, that is so familiar to us and to many others who maybe have never heard of either Prophet Elijah or the Prophet Elisha. Elisha's cry, the chariots of fire, the chariots of Israel and its horsemen, prompts a few questions as well, not the least of which is whether there is one chariot or several. Going by ancient Jewish scholars, we know that it is an honorific title for Elijah as the protector of the nation. A modern commentator draws a parallel with Psalm 68, in which God himself, with his heavenly powers and heavenly hosts of horsemen, is himself the chariot of Israel. Regardless, one thing is clear. This is the second bodily ascension, the taking up into heaven that we know of in Jewish and Christian history. Enoch was the first, way back in the book of Genesis. And Jesus, and according to some traditions, even Mary, are still yet to come. The lectionary, the readings appointed for the day, particularly this gospel of the Transfiguration for this Sunday, help us to focus our attention on the true person of Christ, not on the good man only or the divine son only, but on both. This seems to be at odds with the skeptical approach of many scholars who argue that this story is merely a reconstitution of the story of the resurrection, reading back into time, and so represents a transposition rather than a true transfiguration. That seems to make it all so complex, as well as a little presumptuous. Why would Mark have done such a thing with his good news of the Son of God? And the transfiguration seems to make so much sense in that alone. Peter, James, and John saw a truth. They glimpsed a truth sufficient to sustain their whole life's discipleship, yet not without a few problems. The rest of us see it through their eyes, with all of the self-questioning that encounters divine truth in our way. It makes me think of a conversation in Tolkien's book, The Lord of the Rings, a conversation between Gandalf and Frodo about the elf lord Glorfindel, in which Frodo's near-death experience instills a certain clarity of vision. He says, "You saw him for a moment as he is upon the other side." Whether or not this echo was intended by Tolkien, who himself was a devout Catholic, shows us that we can see people only with the vision that we possess at any given moment in time. That teaches us that we should never assume what is on the surface is the real or the whole person. We should never take a book simply by its cover. That's what the first disciples did. They weren't so sure who Jesus was, and when he appeared there with Moses and Elijah, they were in a quandary. They were frightened, we are told. They didn't know what to do. And so they did the first thing that came to mind. They wanted to build a monument. But Jesus tells us that's not what's important. Building a monument to a memory is not what's really important. What's really important is that we get about the business of the mission of God. And so that's what confronts us on this day. We ourselves are given the mantle of Jesus. Like Elisha succeeded Elijah, so we as the disciples of Christ succeed in the mission of Jesus. We are the ones now responsible for carrying that mission forward into the world. And we do so because we begin to see who Jesus really is. As it has been said, the Son of Man and the Son of God, truly God and truly man. This is who Jesus is. And we don't study it in a book, but rather we experience it like Peter, James, and John, as we see it for ourselves, as we see it by the power of the Spirit, as we see the truth. As we prepare ourselves then for our Lenten journey a few days from now, let us decide for ourselves that we want to make ourselves ready to see the truth of Christ all around us and deep within us. If we do that, then we will be rightly prepared to celebrate the great Alleluia at Easter, for the good news of Jesus will be alive again in us.